On this episode of the New York Baseball Podcast, Wally and I sit down with Yankees broadcast great Ken Singleton. Look
out! Yep, we talk about Yankees and we talk about Ken's career, which goes back to 1970 and the New York Mets.
Yeah, we'll talk about his outstanding playing career, being in the booth, some of his favorite cities, favorite broadcast booths to call, his golf game, who's the best golfer on the Yankees, and it's an awesome, awesome interview. In addition to that, the Mets are hot right now, the Yankees are hot right now. It's a good time to be a New Yorker.
We're pretty hot, too.
We're hot, two hot guys talking baseball. Here we go.
Absolutely. Hey, and let's not forget John Sterling's new home run
call. We have a new call from John Sterling. Here we go. New York Baseball Podcast coming up next. Hope everyone had a fantastic weekend. We're back for another episode of New York. Dan Canobio with the legendary Wally Matthews. Wally, how you doing?
I feel legendary.
Yeah, you were called legendary the other night
on
Picks 11.
I know, and I told Scott, you know, man, it makes me sound old. I don't want to be legendary.
He had a great opening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll take brilliant, award-winning, but legendary.
Yeah, it was nice to see you on television. I put on Picks 11 at 7:30 before the Yankee pregame, and there you were.
And there I was.
Talking the podcast was great.
I got to say one thing, though. They don't pay anything.
No?
Okay? No.
Did you get anything out of it?
No. It cost me money to go there.
Well, you promoted the podcast.
That's right. There you go. We're going to get millions and millions of listeners.
They said New York. They must have said it like 10 times.
Beautiful.
It was great. And they give you a lower third and everything. So that was great. And they brought you on there to talk about the Yankees. We did no Mets on that because it was a Yankees pregame show.
And interestingly enough, I was coming from Citi Field, where I just covered a Met game.
Well, you were there all week, right?
Yeah, I was there all weekend, and they look pretty good this weekend. I tell you, you know what? I get there on Friday, and it's like, here we go again. The first thing that we learn is Juan Lagares is having season-ending toe surgery. Yeah. It's like, oh, my God, here go the Mets.
And the press release was kind of funny. They kind of buried the lead there a little bit. The Mets put out the press release, and it's like, well, on Friday. It was like a story. Well, on Friday, Juan Lagares ran into a wall, mm-hmm. and then he fell down. When he got up, he didn't feel anything, and now his toe got ripped off. He will have season-ending surgery.
The one thing they didn't mention in there is that their x-rays were negative.
That's just par for the course.
But then again, x-rays don't show, you know, when you tear a ligament. But still, you know, the first thing he goes to an MRI tube and those things. It's the Mets. It's the Mets.
It's just unbelievable.
By the way, Plawecki also had negative x-rays. He had a broken hand. And also the other guy, Vargas.
With the hand injury.
Yeah.
And what about DeGrom? Didn't he obviously he had an issue with the, they kind of bungled his injury
too. The hyperextended
too.
Elbow? Yeah, but he came back in one, you know, he missed one start.
Yeah.
And he came back good.
13 strikeouts the other night, so he looks like he's back. The Mets are winning games. They're a nice little winning streak here. They're getting offense from Wilmer Flores, Devin Mazarasco with a very clutch home run on Saturday night. And a huge comeback win, a game that, you know, you would think that at the rate the Mets were going, they would have easily lost.
Yeah, but, you know, just go back to Mazarasco for a second. I'm shocked. I'm really shocked that any team would give up anybody of value for Matt Harvey because the guy was such a crapshoot, first of all. The Mets were already told the world we're getting rid of this guy. You know, we're either going to trade him or we're just letting him go.
Right, usually your leverage is all gone when you basically say that we're trading this guy.
So this was a rare time where the Mets actually, you know, like, not, I don't know if they did something right here or if it just happened by accident, but it worked out in their favor.
Let's give Sandy some credit. I mean, he's had a pretty rough couple weeks here. A lot of his offseason acquisitions have either hit the skids or have gotten injured. And Todd Frazier, you know, I wouldn't say he's nothing to do with Amed Rosario because he's starting to come around a little bit.
Yeah, he's coming around.
Hit two home runs.
Yes, he did.
So, you know, the Mets are winning. They're winning games, and they're getting good pitching. Vargas the other night, on Monday night, 5 innings of no runs. And they asked him after the game, what do you think the biggest difference was between this and your last start? He goes, probably not giving up multiple runs in innings.
Well, at least he didn't say this, the Marlins.
Yeah, that's another thing. The Mets are getting fat on the Marlins, and they have to.
And they have to. Absolutely.
They have to. These are the games you have to win. No one, you know, I don't think anyone saw them sweeping the Diamondbacks, even though the Diamondbacks were reeling a little bit. You know, Goldschmidt, I don't know what's going on with him.
He looked awful.
He's hitting 200, and this guy's one of the best hitters.
Terrible the whole weekend.
Borderline MVP last year candidate, and now he is, like, lost. The Diamondbacks got off to a really good start. So they've come back down to life. No one really saw the Mets pulling off a sweep here, but here they are. Now they're playing the Marlins, and you take a look at the Mets' upcoming schedule. You know, they have to. You know, they got to keep the gas pedal here.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Look, it's hard to sweep any team, even the Marlins, but it would really be a good thing for them to do because then they'd have six in a row. And then where you go? You go to Milwaukee. To Milwaukee. You go to Atlanta. You have to play a doubleheader because of the makeup
on
from
Memorial Day.
The rainout last month. Yeah, on Memorial Day, right? So you got four games with the Braves, who are good. And then you come home and you face the Cubs, who have got to be better than they've been playing.
Cubs are the Cubs. Yeah, so at Brewers, at Braves, home against the Cubs, the Yankees. Then they go out to Arizona and Colorado.
Yeah, it's a tough stretch.
That's tough. So the Mets, they're winning at the right time because, you know, what happens if they kept faltering here and they kept going back and forth and, you know, we would have been talking about, are the Mets going to be sellers?
Well, let's not forget. That's right. They started at 11-1 and then what were they, like 6-19 for the next, you know, the next 25 games. They were just awful. So, you know, you win six in a row now, and again, you're saying which one is the real Mets. I think we might be saying that all season.
They're on pace for 89 wins, Wally. The Mets.
Mm.
But if you read a newspaper or you've covered the Mets in the last 2 weeks, this is like a 100-loss team. This is a team that could do nothing right.
Well, all right. So 89 wins, does that win you the division?
Probably not. You would have to think that the Braves are going to come back down to life. You would have to think that the youth will run into a little bit of a snag here. Unless they go out. They don't have the pitching either.
I'm just talking historically. 89 wins is generally wild card.
No, your boy Girardi would always say, you got to win 90. You got to get to 90 just to get into the discussion, whether it's the wild card or the division. So, you know, if they go on another extended win streak, they've shown the fact that they can win 11 out of 12, the Mets.
Yes, they've also shown they can go on an extended losing streak.
So they can either win 89 or it could be somewhere around 79, like I predicted in our first show.
Is that what you've predicted, 79?
I think 79 or 80.
79 would be a significant increase from last year.
They
only won 70.
Oh, man.
However, after you win 11 of your first 12 games, 79 seems like a failure. No.
Yes, that 11-1 streak is set the Mets up
skewed everything.
Yes, it was put a lot of pressure on Callaway. It gave a lot of false expectations, but I don't think they're as good as that, and I don't think they're as bad as that.
Of course they're not as good. Team has ever been as good as that.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, and then we're talking about Callaway here. He did something over the weekend. I'm sure you obviously were at Citi Field and you knew about this, where he's going to split up Syndergaard and DeGrom, which I think is a very smart move because it preserves the bullpen a little bit.
Yeah, and you know what? He also he actually said a couple of funny things because somebody said, you know, is that a way of trying to get, you know, three-game winning? Because they hadn't won two in a row in a month, right? So, you know, by splitting them up, you're actually setting yourself up for a three-game winning streak here if the guy in the middle. And he said, frankly, he goes, look, we can't even win two in a row right now. This was Friday, and this was before they won those three straight. But, yeah, that's the idea. The idea is that they're going to go deep into games. So every other day, or at least, you know, at that part of the rotation, you're going to have a bullpen that rests.
Yeah, and Syndergaard has been pretty good since he got the verbal lashing from Dave Island.
Once again.
His first start after wasn't that great. I think he threw five innings. He threw a lot of pitches. He walked like three. But his other
I didn't think he was great on Sunday.
Well, Sunday, right?
Yeah, he pitched on Sunday.
Seven innings.
He was great.
So he gave him some length. He had seven strikeouts.
Limited him to one run, but he also threw a ton of pitches again. He had one inning where he only threw four pitches, which helped him big time. But he had other innings where he was throwing 20 pitches and all.
His hair was all over. He's playing with hair a lot because he says on the humid days, and Sunday was pretty humid. Yeah. That's the days when, you know, it gets in his face and stuff. And that was like the discussion earlier in the year.
They have barbers for that.
Yeah, he doesn't want to shave.
Evidently not. DeGrom did it.
Yeah, he didn't lose any mojo.
Maybe his strength is in his hair. Maybe he thinks he's like Samson.
Well, maybe Dave Island will make a comment about his hair.
Probably.
Say, you know what? What has that hair done? what is that? He's the hair hasn't really done a
he's
lot.
He's had the hair longer than 2.5 years, though. That was right.
He had
it
in the minors. He came up with it.
This guy's only been around 2.5 years. What has he done?
Right. He hasn't done enough.
By the way, what did Dave Island do in his career?
I want to look it up. I don't know.
Not much.
I didn't know. I mean, I'm only 30 years old. I don't remember him as a player.
He actually was on I believe he was on the 95 or 96 Yankees.
Is that true? He's got a ring.
No, he does not have a ring. No, so he must be 95.
I think he said 96.
I think it was 95. I'm going to look it up. That's why
the interwebs?
Al Gore invented the interwebs, so we can look it up.
You
right
log
away.
On to your internet?
Yep. Yeah, here we go. Dave Island.
I know if you pitch, like if you appear in one game, you get a ring.
He appeared in four games in the 1995 New York Yankees.
So he has a wild card
ring. 1-1 with a 6.30 ERA for them that year. The next year, he went to the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, and appeared in one game, and his ERA was 20.25.
So one game. But what was the minimum wage back then in 95? I'm sure it was like 250.
I'm sure it was more than you and I are making to do this right now. So, here was his career record for 10 years. 12-27, 5.74 ERA. Okay? And he was, you know, always a relief pitcher.
Well, that's how it works with coaches. It's usually the managers, the coaches that didn't have great careers end up being, you know, effective managers slash coaches.
Now, you know, he was a starter earlier for the Yankees. He was 6-10. 5.23 and 36 starts over 5 years. So he was always a middling guy.
What's his career earnings?
His career earnings. We got to go down the bottom. The bottom tab earnings.
That bottom tab on Baseball Reference. You're going to have a few.
He made $1 million. He made $1 million in total. He's making $100,000 a year. You know, best year, 2000 with Tampa Bay, he made $300,000.
Wow.
His career to date may be incomplete. $1,063,500.
So, yeah, I wonder how much he's making now to coach to be a pitching coach.
He's making probably
300.
I would say what he made for the Devil Rays. Yeah,
because Boone's making 500K a year.
Yeah, that's so underpaid,
isn't it? That's one of the reasons.
Do we know that for a fact that it's 500?
I know it's significantly less than what Girardi.
Well, Girardi's making $4 million.
And I saw that you wrote a nice little. Boone might be making $1 million. I saw you write a nice little story on Forbes.com. Go check it out about your boy Joe Girardi.
Yeah. You know, it struck me that, you know, here's this team that he brought, like, right to the brink of success. And now that they look like they're poised for success, not only this year, but for the future. If they're all these young guys.
Yankees are killing it.
And he's gone. And now Aaron Boone gets to,
take over. I wonder what he thinks deep down inside. Because I've seen him on MLB Network a bunch of times. And he's been over the top praising of the Yankees, and yet they haven't.
What does he think deep down inside? Well, he says he doesn't use any profanity, so he's probably he's got the red patootie.
Oh Jesus! He's probably doing a lot of
that.
Cannot
be. He's got to be a little frustrated.
You know what reminds me of is the Warriors. Remember who's the? No, I can't.
This NBA you're talking?
Yes.
I wouldn't know.
The guy who played for the Knicks. What the heck? Why am I Mark Jackson?
Oh, Mark Jackson. Mark Jackson. I actually covered him.
Yes, Mark Jackson coached the Warriors for about 4 years, and they were kind of like a middling team. They made the playoffs there as a 5 seed. They fired him pretty much for the same reasons that the Yankees got rid of
Girardi.
Girardi's because that he wasn't bringing these youth up. He wasn't. He had a really good team, but he wasn't getting the most out of them. And he was kind of ornery. He has these weird thoughts. He was trying to press a lot of religion on the players. I don't know. Girardi's not doing that.
I hope not.
They ended up firing. Jackson, and what did the Warriors go on to do? They win three,
It also happened with Buck Showalter, which I mentioned in the story. But the thing about Girardi, they've never really given us a concrete reason why the guy was fired. And in fact, you know, they went within one game of the World Series last year. We know that. He made that horrible screw-up in the Cleveland series, and, you know, the team picked him up. And after he was let go, and he wasn't fired, let's make it clear what happened here. They just didn't renew his contract. His contract ran out. We said, okay. Cashman was asked, you know, was it game two in Cleveland? And he said, no, this decision was made before that.
That's crazy. They probably made it in like July or June.
I heard it was made as far back as May, last May.
And last May, they were off to a great start.
Yeah, but
not as good as they're doing right now. But
clearly, there were other factors besides results. And I actually wrote a column that said this last year from my old place, NYSportsDay.com, which said, you know, no results would have saved this guy's job, even if they had gone to the World Series. You know, because they had made this decision back in May.
That would have been tough. That would have been tough. But
hey,
you know
they
what?
Did it before, man. They did it before. They did it in 1964.
Right.
Right?
I was negative 25 years old.
They went to the World Series. Was Yogi Berra the manager then? Berra was the manager, and they got swept, I think, by the Cardinals.
Right.
And they canned Berra. I mean, it happens.
It's been done.
Yeah.
That's
everything's been done.
Yeah, and it's not, you're not re-renting the wheel over here. The Yankees.
No. So let's talk about our guest today, man. I'm excited.
Look out.
That's right,
man. I couldn't find any YouTube clips of Ken Singleton, who will be joining us momentarily. But I'm looking forward to this one.
Me too. We'll get him to say it, first of all. And I want to talk to him. You know, look, he's retiring this year. I know a lot of Yankee fans are very upset about it because they tweet to me, like, why is it? Like, I know why he's retiring, but they ask me all the time, why is Ken Singleton retiring? I assume because he doesn't want to work anymore.
For starters, he's 70 years old.
All right, but he's in good shape. He's
70. That age is just a number, but he has a lot of grandchildren. I've heard his interview with on Michael Kay's show, and he wants to play more golf.
Okay.
That's three great reasons.
He doesn't do that many games. Doesn't he have enough golf time?
Yeah, they kind of maybe they lowered his total of games this year.
Oh, we'll ask him.
Well, he probably requested, I want to do less and less, right, and then eventually just go off to the sunset on his own terms, which right, not
so
a lot of people
we'll
can
ask,
say.
No, you're right, especially around the Yankees. So we'll ask him about that. I want to talk to him about his playing career, too, because, you know, I really liked him as a Met, and I was surprised when they got rid of him, you know, after only a couple of years.
Yeah.
Then he wound up having a terrific career in Baltimore. And he's probably the only guy in that yes booth, with the exception of Michael Kay, who never played
that's,
for the team.
Yes, I'm gonna have to ask him that. Is how'd you get this job? Because it's a great job. It's one of the best broadcasting jobs you can get.
And it was like a place where, like, you know, George Steinbrenner could take care of his favorites from the Yankees. You know, he just put them in the booth.
Right, Bobby Mercer.
Yeah. So that's a very good question. We're gonna find out.
All right. So let's get to it. Ken Singleton of the Yes Network.
Let's talk to a man that you and I, well, I've been watching, you know, I watched his entire career because I'm older than you, but I know that you've been listening to his entire broadcasting career
yes.
as well. And listen, when you just look at his resume, 15 major league seasons, you know, three All-Stars, runner-up for the MVP award in 1979, terrific player, and also a guy on a long list of players that the Mets gave up on way too soon. One of the many voices of the New York Yankees, Ken Singleton, joins the New York Baseball Podcast. Ken, thanks so much for coming on today.
Well, Dan, it is my pleasure.
Ken, before we get into, you know, anything current here, I must tell you, on my Twitter feed, I am asked every single day, why is Ken Singleton retiring? And I can't answer it. You know, you seem to be at the peak of your broadcasting skills, and I also want to get into how you even got into this in the first place. But just tell us why you're walking away at this point.
Well, it wasn't an easy decision. I will say that it's more of a family thing, and personally, I told myself years ago that I was not going to stay in the booth forever. And I have grandkids now, and I'd love to hang out with them. They live 2 hours north of us in New Jersey, so we go up there for the day. I watch my grandson play ball. And I just felt it was time. My daughter graduated from Penn State a couple of weeks ago, and I always felt that when she graduated, it was time for me to graduate as well. She's the youngest one of my children. So everything's been done. You know, my wife and I had a lot of fun this past winter. We stayed more in Florida, and we did a lot of things, outdoor things that you can't do up north. And I just felt it was time to move on. Yeah. I enjoy baseball. I love my job. There's no better job than doing Yankee games. I've been here 22 years, and they've had a winning record every year. And it's not an easy decision, but I just felt it's time.
Kenny, this is obviously you're leaving something out here. This is all about golf, isn't it?
Well, that too. You know, I enjoy playing. I enjoy playing with my friends. A lot of them are moving down to Florida, and I've reacquainted with Mike Torres, who was a teammate of mine for 4 years, and we played a lot of golf in the off season. And it was that's it too. You know, I love to play. It's a personal challenge to play this game. In fact, when I'm finished talking with you guys today, I'm going to go out and play play about 18 holes.
All right, we won't keep you too long then. Who are you? Do you play with any of the current Yankees? And
yeah.
who's good?
I know Hicks is good.
Well, I've heard that Hicks is excellent. I've seen him on the driving range. I haven't played with him. I think as a broadcaster, there's a certain separation from the players. You get to know them on the field. But once it's over, I keep it professional, and I don't hang out with players. It's just not the way it should be done.
Kenny, yeah. Do you hit lefty or righty on the tees?
I play right-handed, although whenever I get near a tree and I'm in trouble, I can get out of trouble hitting left.
Wow, that's
switch
effective.
Hitter
that's
on
very
the course.
Effective. What about your launch angle? Are you working on your exit velocity, all that good stuff?
Well, it's a game you definitely have to practice, and you can't go for a month and not pick up the club and hope to be successful.
Ken, Dan and I were talking before we called you about, you know, you're the only, I believe, the only player in the revolving door yes booth that never played for the Yankees. How did you wind up hooking up with them?
That's an interesting story. Before I came to the Yankees, I was doing games for the Expos. I was there for 12 years.
Wow.
And I noticed during a couple of broadcasts when we came to New York, that some Mike McCarthy and Joe Cohen would sit in the booth. I didn't know them at the time, but they were kind of scouting me.
Hmm.
And when my contract was up in Montreal, they asked if I would do an interview, and I did it. And they had me come to New York, and Jim Cott and I worked. Well, we didn't actually work, but it was an audition in which we were supposed to do three innings of the World Series from the year before, just looking at the tape and voicing it over. And after about one inning, they said, "That's enough. You're
good." Got the job. So that was what? So that was back in 97?
The next deal was I had to meet George Steinbrenner. And that was the real issue, I felt. Of course, I didn't play for the Yankees. And when I met George, we flew down to Tampa. It was Legends Field at the time. And George's first words to me were, "Our friends aren't going to like you." And I said, "With all due respect, how come?" And he said, "I can't recall all the bad things you used to do to us." And I said, "I was just doing my job." And he said, "Well, you did it very well. You and that Eddie Murray guy."
Well, that's good.
And I went home that night and I told my wife I wasn't sure this was going to work out. But then the next day I got the call that I'd gotten the job, and George, gave his blessing. I think one reason was because he knew I grew up in New York. Occasionally, when my parents would come to the game, when the Orioles would come to Yankee Stadium, he would give them the tickets right next to the dugout.
Wow.
And I know it was, which was very nice of him to do. And over the years, I have found out from various sources that I was one of his favorite visiting players.
No kidding.
So, maybe that had something to do with me getting the job.
Certainly, it certainly doesn't hurt.
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah.
George obviously was a difficult guy to work for and play for at times. But I wanted to take you back to, like, 1970. You played for Gil Hodges. And
yes.
We hear so much, obviously those of us who grew up with the 69 Mets, kind of revere Hodges. He's like in a Hall of Fame, of our own making. What was he like to play for, actually?
He was the strong, silent type. It was much that I expected, because when I was very young, my dad was a Dodger fan, and the Dodgers would be on TV all the time. Primarily because of Jackie Robinson and Campanella and Newcomb. But, they had great players, Ferrillo and Hodges and, of course, Duke Snider, Billy Cox and all these players. And it was one thing that impressed me as a youngster was the players on TV made the game look very easy. And I felt that I would try it. And Gil Hodges was a big part of it. And I recall when I hit my first home run, I hit it in Montreal. The next day, he came up to me and said, "The player who hit a home run the night before gets to take the lineup card out to the dugout." And it was sort of like his welcome to me of being in the big leagues. Of course, I'd gone 0 for my first 11. I thought I was going back to the minors. But, that particular day, I had two hits, including a home run. And it was sort of like him trying to relax me at the major league level.
Kenny, you say you're also a New York guy, and I know you played your college ball here on Long Island at Hofstra, and talk a little bit about. I played college ball on Long Island as well, and I know about the brutal springs. And this spring was awful when it comes to weather wise. What was it like for you to kind of come from the East Coast? I know it's not exactly like a hotbed for prospects. So talk a little about your experience playing on Long Island and eventually moving up into the Orioles organization.
Well, I grew up in Westchester County in Mount Vernon, New York, and my school, high school, Mount Vernon High School, was primarily known as a basketball school. They've had several players go on to the NBA.
Ben Gordon.
Players who were after me. Yeah, Ben Gordon, the McRae brothers, quite a few others. And but I was the first baseball player to make it to the major league. And then I went to Hofstra, but I went on a basketball scholarship.
Oh, wow.
And although I enjoyed basketball and it was a great way to keep in shape, but I think when you're 19 years old, you can do anything. But I knew I was a baseball player, and baseball was my first love. I was just more accomplished at the game, and I knew the scouts were following me. And I to get drafted by the Mets was like a dream come true. After the Dodgers and Giants left, my dad was a big Mets fan. And I can recall the early days of the Mets when they weren't very good. and it might have helped me get up to the major leagues a little quicker. But by the time I got there, they were the reigning world champions.
Yeah, they were.
It wasn't easy to break in on that team. And in fact, I got sent out that spring to go to AAA for more experience. And I can recall Tom Seaver tapping me on the shoulder as I was packing my bag to get off to a good start in AAA, and you'll be back here in June. And on June 24th, I was back in the big leagues. and I think about that, and Tom Seaver didn't have to do that. You know, he was I think he was a Cy Young Award winner.
He was in 69, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and I felt it was very nice of him to do that, and I played really well down in AAA. I think I was leading the league in home runs, runs batted in, and batting average at the time. Maybe I was off one of those categories. I was second. I think it was runs batted in, but still, I was having a great year, and the Mets called me back, and I never went back to the minor leagues again.
You know, do you stay in touch with any of the guys from that team? I mean, obviously, you know, they just lost, I was going to say, Ed Charles. Rusty Staub wasn't part of that team. You got traded for Rusty, obviously. Do you stay in touch with any of those Mets that were part of that 69 team?
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because during the winter I got invited to play in a golf tournament in Venice, Florida. And it's about an hour 15 minutes south of where I live on the west coast of Florida. And I hooked up again with Wayne Garrett, who I hadn't seen in years, and Rich Folkers, who I hadn't seen in years as well. They were both in the tournament. It was good to see them. I can recall when I first came to the big leagues, my hometown, Mount Vernon, had a parade for me, and Wayne was kind enough to be in the parade. And I always told my dad, I think they had the parade the first month I was in the big leagues, just to make sure that if I got sent back or it didn't work out, that they'd already had the parade. But, of course, we went on to have a 15-year career, and I enjoyed every minute of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing there is that a lot of those guys on the 69 Mets had very short careers, like Wayne Garrett, Ken Boswell, Al Weiss, even Cleon Jones, who was, a terrific hitter. And, you were around for 15 years. That was just kind of a team that came together at the right time for one season.
Yeah, it was. The Mets were primarily known for their good pitching, and even in the minor leagues, the teams were stacked with good pitchers. They didn't have many position players. I just happened to be one, along with Mike Jorgensen, Tim Foley, Amos Otis, players like that were the primary position players in the minor leagues. Of course, the Mets thought enough of me that they traded me to Montreal to get Rusty. But to me, as my dad, I remember coming home that day, and my mom was kind of crying. You know, it's not like now when you can watch any game anywhere, anytime. Mm-hmm. My mom was thinking, oh, we'll never see him play again. But my dad was more practical. He said, first of all, he's going to go up to Montreal. He's going to get a chance to play every single day. This is a new team. And my dad was right. And I made a name for myself in Montreal. I had my first really big year with the Expos, and I got on the radar of the Baltimore Orioles, and I got traded to Baltimore, which was the break of my career. You know, I played there for 10 years. During those 10 years, we won more games than any other team.
Mm-hmm.
I also found out over the years that when I was traded to Baltimore, the Yankees were trying to get me, but they didn't have the players to satisfy what the Expos needed. They wanted to trade Roy White, and they thought he was too old. He was older than I was. And they didn't want an older outfielder, so they traded with Baltimore and got Rich Coggins, and he was a younger outfielder along with Dave McNally.
So if you would have got traded to the Yankees, that would have made it a lot easier to get in the booth, right?
It might have been, maybe it might
maybe
not.
Maybe not.
Have been.
It's right.
It depended on how I played. You know, that I always felt when I went to New York with the Orioles that I knew my friends and family were there, so I had to play pretty well.
Yeah, that's true.
And I usually did up in New York. If my parents – I always seemed to play well, especially when my mom was at the games.
Uh-huh. Well, I just felt more pressure when that was the case.
Well, no, because I had to eat going home, I guess.
Right.
I stayed with my folks when I was in New York. And it's interesting because after they retired – they moved down to Baltimore to be closer to their grandkids. Mm. And And I really appreciated that. You know, my parents aren't around anymore, but the effects that they had on my kids were just awesome.
Now, Ken, you talk about playing on the Orioles, such a great team. No team won more games in that 10-game span. So obviously, you know good baseball, and this New York Yankee team in 2018, man, are they on a tear right now? They are just winning games at an historic clip. What's been the biggest takeaway for you? What's impressed you the most about this 2018 Yankees?
Well, I think the thing that I think of most is I don't think they're playing as well as they can actually play. I think they're what has happened to the division, especially in the American League East, is kind of going back to the way it was when I first came to the Yankees as a broadcaster. It was the Yankees and the Red Sox and everybody else scrambling. And it's Yankees, Red Sox, and then the rest of the division trying to hang with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only saving grace is for the other three teams that there's a second wild card now. And there might be a shot at the playoffs, but a limited one. I think that what you have seen, that different players have taken turns carrying this team for periods of time. In the first month, it was Didi, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And Stanton wasn't doing much. Judge was okay. Judge was having a good month. But now Stanton seems to be heating up. And Duhar wasn't even on the scene.
No.
And Gleyber Torres certainly wasn't there yet as well. So I think this team can play even better. I think Tanaka can certainly pitch better than he's been pitching. And although, you know, they scored 10 runs for him last night, that'll help any pitcher win a game.
Yeah, the ball was flying out of the park last night, too, from both sides.
That's Texas.
Yeah. Let me ask you about Stanton. I mean, obviously, he and Didi have kind of flipped roles now. Now Didi is, you know, is cold and Stanton is heating up. What do you think was happening in April? How much do you think, you know, the New York factor, you know, trying to impress the New York fans, the New York media, trying to justify your contract and your MVP, how much do you think that was weighing on him? Do you think that had anything to do with the slow start that he had?
Yeah, I think it did, and here's the reason. When he first came, I was at his first press conference in spring training, and he mentioned that he's just there to fit in and trying to be a piece of the puzzle. Well, that's all well and good. When you come to a new team, you can try not to step on any toes.
Hmm.
But after a while, you're going to have to take your turn driving the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was this period for him of just getting to know the guys and getting used to being around his new teammates. And one question I'm going to have for him when I see him next, I'm going to ask him if he's having any fun. But he's never been on a team like this.
Oh, my God, yeah.
What are the Yankees, what, 31-13?
31-13. They're on pace for 114 wins, Ken.
Yeah, he's never been on a team that's had a winning record.
You can make the case that he's never been in a game that was, you know, truly important.
Right.
That's exactly right. So, to me, that's what you go out there for. You try and win the World Series every year. And when you're on good teams, and fortunately I was for many, many years, that you go to the ballpark, you expect to win. You just don't know how it's going to happen. And sometimes it's you that makes it happen, and sometimes it's somebody else. And the Yankees have various players, including Stanton now, who can help them win a game all by themselves if they have to.
Now, you called a lot of games in that 1998 season, and something you're seeing here in New York and on the talk radio shows, podcasts, blogs, you name it, they want to bring up the 1998 Yankees to this team. Because the Yankees, I think they're on pace for 113 wins, if my math is correct. So obviously the Yankees won 114 in 1998. Do you see any similarities between these two teams? I know a lot of questions were asked to Wells at his party last week, and Posada quickly shot it down and all that. You were there for 98. Do you see any similarities between these two?
These guys aren't there yet. they're playing pretty well. Those Yankees of that year, they were just relentless.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't lose a series. But if they got a chance to sweep you, they would do it.
Yeah.
If they split the first two games, somehow they would win that third game. But if they came to your town and won the first two, they were leaving with three. So that's just the way they were. They're very good offensively. I think their starting pitching was a little better than what the Yankees have now. Of course, the season isn't over yet, and Brian Cashman is very resourceful. If he feels the need to get a pitcher, I'm sure he'll go out and do it.
Yeah, and that's something that really wasn't done back then also. I mean, you know, the trade deadline now, everybody kind of reshuffles their deck.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting in July this year. It depends on, you know, where the Yankees are along with the Red Sox in the standing. These two teams could probably push each other towards great heights during the course of the season. And it might boil down to the division winner is how they play against each other.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and it comes down to the final three games of the season, which makes it really interesting this year. But, Ken, I was going to say the reason why, to me, the comparison doesn't work yet, obviously, we've got 120 games to go, and the remarkable thing about the 1998 Yankees is that they were able to maintain that intensity an entire season. We don't know if these guys can do that.
That's true, although, to me, when you win ball games at the pace the Yankees are now, you gain a confidence every day. As I said, you go out there expecting to win. And a lot of times, you might not even play a good game. The other team might give you the game. You know, they'll just make mistakes, throw the ball all over the place, and you end up winning anyway. You know, there are some teams in this division that aren't playing particularly well right now. Baltimore's one. I get to see them a lot because I live in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
But, usually I watch their pregame show, and then I'll – turn the Yankees on, watch the Yankee game. And if the Orioles are doing anything at all, I might turn over and watch the Machado at bat, see how he's doing, which he's having a great year, but he's the only one on the team who's playing well.
Do you think they're going to trade him?
Yeah, I do. I think it's in their best interest to do so. At this point, I don't think the Yankees are a trade partner.
No, not anymore.
I think they've got and Duhar, and they've got Drury as a good backup. Right. So I don't think they're in need of a third baseman. And Gregorius, to me, is not going anywhere.
Well, that's an interesting question, though. When he becomes a free agent, you know, what do the Yankees do? Do they make a huge pitch to hold on to him, or do they start looking elsewhere?
Who are you talking about?
Didi, 2 years.
I would try and keep Didi. I mean, he's a big part of the team. He's a team leader in a way that's infectious. The rest of the players love him. Even when he's not hitting, which he hasn't really been doing lately, he's playing a great shortstop.
Yes. He's never. I tell you, see the play he made last night at second base?
Yeah, I did. And to me, if you can separate the two, particularly in an important position like shortstop, and not take your offensive woes into the field, you can still contribute to wins. I learned that many years ago in winter ball playing for Roberto Clemente.
Wow.
There's a lot of ways to help your team win games, and hitting is only one of them.
Well, how difficult is it, though, when a hitter's struggling, you know, not to take it out to the field? Did you ever – I mean, I understand, you know, Clemente's advice resonated with you very strongly, but how difficult was it for you as a young player not to take those things out to the field with you?
Yeah, I think as a young player it can bother you more because you're worried about getting sent back to the minor league.
Yeah.
If you don't produce offensively, I mean, that's why you're there to begin with, because you can hit. You've proven so in the minors. But as you gain veteran status, and I think Didi's there, I think, you know, the worst thing that can happen to you is get a couple of days off, which has already happened to him. He did drive in a run with a double last night.
Yes, he did.
So I also I've mentioned this many times on the air, when you watch players hit, the ones that are particularly in a slump, watch how they make their out. If they all of a sudden start to hit the ball a little harder, even though the ball's caught, he lined out the center last night, and he did. I think that might have been his first or second at bat.
Yeah.
Right.
Hit the ball really hard, and if you can draw your walks, that means you have your strike zone under control. So eventually, you're going to get those balls are going to start falling in. And I think Didi's about ready for a turnaround here.
Now, Kenny, you spent a lot of time with this Yankee team, obviously, being the broadcaster, and you spent a lot of time in spring training with this team, so you got a chance to see a lot of the young players as they work their way up over the years, and right now there's no one shining brighter than Gleyber Torres. Two home runs on Monday night. I think he's hitting upwards of like 330. He's playing outstanding defense at second. I mean, just did you see this? I know a lot of Yankee fans knew that he was coming through the ranks, but, you know, you got to see him on those backfields. What's your take on Gleyber Torres?
Well, I saw him last year in spring training, and I thought, man, he's playing like a 5-year veteran. There wasn't much talk of him making the team last year, but I think on other teams, he could have done it. Now, this spring, he didn't have as good a spring offensively, and I think it's because he only played 55 games last year because of his surgery. So they sent him back to the minors like they should have. He got hot. They bring him back up, and now he's probably the best ninth-place hitter in baseball.
Oh, man, jeez.
There's not many guys who are as productive as he is. And to me, his defense is unbelievable. Great range, both to his right and to his left. He's very smooth on that play behind the bag at second base. Mm-hmm. I just think that the Yankees have found themselves, particularly if they keep Didi, they've found themselves a second baseman for a long, long time.
It looks like they've gotten themselves an infield for a long time. But the thing that, you know, has impressed me about Glaber, that even, you know, he obviously was over-anxious his first at-bat and he looked bad, but he just appears to be the kind of guy who's been around for a while. You don't see him as a rookie. Uh-huh. He doesn't play a guy who's comfortable. Right. Right?
You expect him to make the plays. He may have had a few hiccups in spring training, but to me, I chalk that up to being spring training, you know, for everybody. Yeah, and early in the season, when you're playing in the really bad weather, and there was a lot of this year, you have a tendency to see some sloppy play. And that happened a bit to the Yankees. I mean, their defense, for a while, they were leading the league in errors. I don't know if that's true anymore.
Yeah, he kind of shored up the defense. You're right.
I think the Rangers are leading the league now.
Yeah. But Kenny,
to me, I hated the play when it was cold. I really hated it.
It's not a game for cold weather, man, really.
No, it's not. No. Even though I grew up in New York and then during high school, sometimes the snow was coming down.
Yeah.
I didn't like it then.
You never get used to it. I mean, you know, that's the fallacy that because we grew up here, you know, we're used to it. No, thanks. Still cold.
Kenny, I want to play a little rapid fire with you, and this is all about broadcasting. Are you ready?
Okay.
Best stadium, your favorite stadium besides Yankee Stadium?
Oh, Safeco Field in Seattle. I just love that place. It's beautiful. I've had an affinity to Seattle ever since I was born. My parents were married there after World War II, and they almost stayed. They liked it a lot, but there was more opportunities back east, and my dad moved the family. I wasn't born yet, but he and my mom moved to New York.
Okay, favorite, I mean, I know the answer here. Favorite city?
Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle. I can't say that because the favorite visiting city, but New York is always number one.
Nice, like that.
I was fortunate enough to grow up in New York. My dad, when I went away to play minor league baseball, he told me, look, you're from New York. You've already seen a lot of things. You're just trying to get back here.
Mm-hmm.
and 3 years later, I was back in the big league.
What's the
and,
best?
I just feel there's so many things at your doorstep in New York.
Oh, yeah.
And I know things can be expensive there and really expensive for a young kid like me growing up. But just to be able to experience the city and all its glamour and all its hustle and bustle. I remember my dad was right a lot of ways, but some ways he wasn't because it's a big country. And there's a lot of diversity out there. It's not only New York City and the rest of the country, but New York is always number one.
How about the best broadcast booth to call a game?
Well, I think the home one is always the best because that's where you're used to. Seattle, this is just beautiful. Anaheim's nice, too. I mean, they have a beautiful stadium. All these booths are good. There's some that aren't as good as others, but
have you done a Nationals game?
Oakland being one.
Have you done a Nationals game? Because I watched last week and they look like they're on the surface of the sun. They were so high up in there.
That press box is real high. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember we did a game there a couple of years ago, and I mentioned on the air. I said, "Man, we are really high up here. If the Orioles were playing at home today, we could call two games at one."
Fenway's pretty up there too.
Yeah, it's all right. But, you know, Fenway's always historic. I always enjoy going to Boston.
Great town. Great city.
Just the excitement of the Yankees and the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And back in the day when I played for the Orioles, I enjoyed going to Boston and beating them. I really did.
Wait, one last one. One last one for me, at least, is how did you come up uh-huh. with your catchphrase, "Look out"? I love it. I love that catchphrase.
It's just the natural. You know, that's rich. To me, maybe I was saying that in my mind as pitchers were close to me back in the day and getting out of the way. I mean, Nolan Ryan was no fun, especially when he came close.
No, and his control wasn't.
That's how it started.
Yeah, he was effectively wild, wasn't he?
Well, he could be. I think he was a little less wild than he wanted hitters to think. he was a very uncomfortable at bat. Even though I hit 300, I didn't hit any home runs off him.
Wow.
I think I was 12 for 40, but I struck out 16 times. So when he got you out, it was usually a strikeout.
Yeah, I'm sure you weren't alone in that. Kenny, we're going to let you go, but I got to ask you, and I don't mean to make your retirement more difficult, but if the Yankees play as well as they seem to be for the rest of the year, and they go all the way, will that make it more difficult for you to walk away?
No, and I'll tell you why, because I could see this coming. This Yankee team is going to be good for a number of years. They have young stars. They had a team the other day on the field that nobody was older than 28 or 29.
That's unheard of with the Yankees.
I think it's the youngest they've been in 50 years. So I do believe, and one thing that the Yankees can do, they have the wherewithal to keep their players if they want to. Not like some organizations that the players get too expensive and they have to leave. So I think, and the Yankees, of course, are about winning the World Series. I've said many times on the air, it's not so much that they play against everybody else, they play against their own history. And that's why the Steinbrenner family is always committed to trying to win. And this goes back to the days of George leading the organization.
Kenny, thanks so much. First of all, that's a great line. They play against their own history. That's a pretty high standard. We wish you a great season and a long, happy, and healthy retirement. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Kenny, man.
It is my pleasure, and I will see you during the course of the season.
Sure will. Okay. Hope to see you this weekend.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay. Bye-bye, guys.
Take care.
Great gentleman, Ken Singleton.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean,
play against their own history. How good is that?
One of my favorite parts of that interview right there is the fact that he just casually threw in the fact that he played for Roberto Clemente in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Just a little throwaway line.
Great baseball. Just think of the people that, you know, floated in and out of his career between Clemente, Gil Hodges, you know, his times in Baltimore. It's just amazing. And now, you know, 22 years calling Yankee games and never having even played for them.
Yeah, he's a baseball lifer. He's had a charmed baseball life.
He really has.
Starting in Mount Vernon, playing for Hofstra, going to the Expos. The
Mets should have held on to him.
Mets,
another guy the Mets should have held on to.
He played for some pretty iconic franchises. And
they should have found somebody else to trade for Rusty Staub.
It would have been great. It would have been a nice hometown story. But how about that? He goes from having a really good career to ending up in the Yankees booth for the title runs they went on in the late 90s, the Jeter years, the A-Rod years, now up until the 2009 championship, and now this year.
You've got a whole generation of Yankee fans who don't even know that he played, because he didn't play for the Yankees. I'm sure there's a lot of people don't even know that he played for the Mets, that he played for the Montreal Expos that don't exist. There are a lot of Yankee fans who don't even know that there was a Montreal Expos.
I know. That's a question I wanted to get to, but we ran out of time. There's some players on the team that – I'm sure he wouldn't ask this, but there's got to be some players on the team that don't even know that he was a major leaguer.
Oh, without a doubt.
Like
I mean, there were players. But that's
like
not new. That's not new. Years ago, you know, there were guys who did not know Phil Rizzuto had been a player or Yogi Berra.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was awesome. I really wanted to know how he came up with the lookout because that's obviously his catchphrase. And that was great. Thank you for getting him on.
We thank him for coming on. That was very good of him to do that, especially since he's basically on vacation now visiting his son down in West Palm and playing golf.
Right, it took him a nice 30 minutes to talk to us. And you talk to anyone, Meredith Barakovitz and Michael Kay and anyone that works for YES, they talk about him like he's like,
oh, they love
he's
him.
Like the grandfather. I don't know because of his age, but he's like the father figure for everyone.
It's also the fact that he's a gentleman,
right,
you know?
Exactly.
He's really a good guy and, you know, obviously very knowledgeable about the game.
Well, did you see this? This is a storyline that came out last week that was just like tailor-made for the New York Baseball podcast. The Daily News put DeGrom and Syndergaard in Yankee uniform. And Met fans nearly lost
their
shit.
That's just trolling. Come on, man.
Well, the reason why it happened was because it was last week when we had all the rain and the Mets weren't playing any games. The Yankees had played five innings in the entire week. So Daily News, you know, the editors, I mean, you know this. The Daily News.
That's the only place I haven't worked yet in this town. So
So the Daily News is like, we got to come up with something here. They came out there and was like, put DeGrom, that's like when I worked at the Met jersey.
Yeah, Mark the Post. My editor would call me on a day like that and say, I need a back page. It's like, all right. To just make something up, you know, come up with something. So they came up with something. Listen, the column was written by John Harper, who's a great baseball writer, and it was not nearly as trolling as the back page. And you know, the Mets are never going to give Syndergaard and DeGrom to the Yankees.
How does that work? When you write a great article like Harper does and so many great articles that you wrote, and then on the back page, the New York Post it. Or
the editors do you no favor.
Do you ever get pissed off about
that? Of course. Of course. I can tell you a story, but it's a box. Well, I'll tell you two stories. One's a basketball story. One's a boxing story. Knicks were playing the Houston Rockets in the finals, NBA Finals in 1994. My editor says, I got a great idea. Rip Houston. Like, rip Houston? What do you mean, the team? No, the city. Rip the city. So I write this stupid column, and I still have it, you know, and it was kind of like I tried not to rip Houston, but, you know, it was kind of condescending. Anyway, he puts me on the back page, my face, with a stupid drawing of a cowboy hat on it under the headline, "This place is a hellhole." Which I never said in the story. Now, I go to Houston now to cover the damn finals. Okay? I turn on the TV. The sports guy has got the blow up of the picture. Like, you know, and here I am now, and, you know, going into the arena. Wow. And people, like, are recognizing me from this stupid thing.
They throwing stuff at you?
No, but, you know, they were pretty nice about it. You know, but they all have guns. It's Texas.
That's true.
You know? So, like, I'm just like, hey, look, man, that was the editor. I never said hellhole. Read the story. The word doesn't appear in there.
But so, what's the, like, what did you say about Houston? Like,
not actually,
NASA sucks?
I'll tell you what. No. No. As a matter of fact, I said the best thing about Houston was the first word spoken from the surface of the moon.
Houston?
Because Neil Armstrong said, Houston, tranquility base here.
That's good.
How about that?
People don't read the fine print.
That's right. No, they just read this place as a hellhole. But no, everything was cool because then I went into a Mexican restaurant that night, and the owner comes up to me, he goes, aren't you the guy? And I said, yes, I am. He goes, I'm a New Yorker, man. Everything's on me tonight. So then another time, I was covering a Mike Tyson fight. I was with the Post again, same thing. And Tyson pulled out of the fight, broke his thumb. I don't remember who he was fighting. Anyway, somehow the editor decided that Mike Tyson didn't really have a broken thumb. He was afraid of whoever he was supposed to be fighting. He said, you know, get his x-rays because I understand he doesn't have a broken thumb. I said, I can't get his x-rays. It's all right, try and get his x-rays. So I called the Nevada State Athletic Commission. I said, look, is there any chance I could see Mike Tyson's x-rays? They say, no, it's against the law. You know, you need it. So all I right, tell, bye. So I call the editor, okay? And I say, look, it's against the law. I can't give him his x-rays. They write a story the next day with my byline on it, which I did not write, which says, Mike Tyson refused to give the New York Post his x-rays yesterday, fueling speculation that he doesn't...
Oh, my God.
I had to go apologize to Tyson. I said, look, I didn't write this. I don't know what the
hell
this
is. What's
that
like, apologizing to Mike Tyson?
Oh, he was fine. He didn't care. He didn't even know about it. And I brought it to his attention. If I hadn't said anything, he never would have known.
Well, you could have got the answer for why he's... Well,
that's right. Yeah. Then I shook his hand. He didn't scream, so I think he was all right. No, I don't remember who he was going to fight, but I don't know. In any event, my point is... Editors never make your job easier.
Yeah, so John Harper writes this article, and it makes sense because back last week, if you rewind a little bit, the Mets were not winning ball games like they are right now. They didn't win.
Right, so they were sellers. They were
sellers. Yeah, now they're buyers. So, you know, obviously they aren't going to get traded to the Yankees.
No.
But if the reason that you...
They would throw them in a dumpster before they give them to the Yankees.
It's never
going to
happen. I mean, you have to listen to all this on sports radio all week long. I was just rolling my eyes all week. It's never going to happen.
I know.
And, you know, yes, the Mets... You have to take a look at their team, and you know they have commodities here. And
who would the Yankees have to give up?
Well, that's the thing. It's
Glaber.
Like, you go to Mets
Aaron
fans Twitter.
Judge,
you go to Mets fans Twitter, and it's like we want Glaber, we want Andujar.
Yeah, Severino and Aaron Judge.
Right.
I think that would be fair.
You got these fans are nuts. These fans are nuts, and I want to pull this up. Where is my phone? Lost it.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I got it right here. My brother Robbie sent me this. Well, you're going to get a kick out of this.
Okay.
So he went to Giancarlo Stanton's Twitter page.
Okay.
And Giancarlo Stanton hasn't tweeted since opening day.
Mm.
So therefore, he kind of like leaves it open for people just to go to his page and leave replies, you know, after he hits a home run or
right.
after he,
tell
he
him
strikes
that
out.
Okay.
Or give him like the bad news.
Okay.
So this guy, Tory Hill. On April 10th, I guess Giancarlo had a bad game. This is an all-time reckless reaction right here from a fan.
Let's hear it.
I can improve your batting average and make you one of the top hitters in the league. If what I show you doesn't work, then you don't owe me anything.
Your money back.
If it does, though, it will cost you. Please give me a call if you're interested. 609-289-6576.
Did you call it?
No. I'm going to call right now.
Call it.
Should I call
absolutely.
It right now?
Absolutely. Find out if Stanton never called this guy.
I'm going to call him now.
God, because back in April, he might have.
I mean, who?
Nothing was going right.
Who does that?
A lunatic.
This guy is out of his mind. I got to find it right here. I got to call this number. 609. Yeah, 609-289.
Tory Hill, huh?
Tory Hill giving out advice here.
I don't know what he's giving out. Let's find out.
Let me see here.
Is he giving batting lessons or chemistry?
You know what the weird thing is? It's his only tweet. He didn't tweet anything else.
Well, maybe Giancarlo called him back. He doesn't have to tweet.
It's ringing.
Tell him you're Giancarlo.
I'm a friend of Giancarlo. He's looking for...
Yeah, calling for a friend.
I'm going to leave him a voicemail.
God, can you imagine if Giancarlo called and the guy didn't pick up? What an idiot. He missed, like, his big chance.
Tori must be at work. He must be at his hitting clinic.
You know, text him. Say, this is Giancarlo. I missed you.
This is Tori. Leave your name and number at the beep.
It is Tori. No beep.
There's no beep.
At the tone, please record your message. When you finish recording,
no way Stanton was
going to
wait through this. No chance.
More options.
Hey, Tori, this is Dan Canobio, and I'm friends with Giancarlo Stanton. I want to take you up on that offer to get some hitting advice. I hope it's your rates aren't too high. I think you can hit even more home runs. Give us a call back, 631-885-0706.
All right, we'll see.
So I hope that works.
Maybe he'll make you into a good hitter. I heard you were a pretty good hitter.
I was pretty decent, left-handed bat.
So maybe he can help you for the wiffle ball tournament.
Oh, I have an update. I know you texted. We're hitting the Costases from both angles right now. I know you texted Bob to see if he wants to play. I texted.
He definitely wants to play.
Keith Costas texted me to see how did the interview go. I said it was awesome. I sent him a clip. You know, thank you. Thank to your dad again for coming on. And he goes, this is what he wrote. He really, with caps, really wants to come out and play at your house.
He's going to come out and play. I'm telling you, man.
He texted me about it twice.
David Cone's coming. Let's see if we can get Hernandez to come.
We got to sweeten the pot for Keith Hernandez somehow.
We'll feed his cat.
Yeah, we'll
what
bring.
What do we have to do? For God's sake.
We don't have a dog, so it won't. No beef between Haji and
Lulu.
You can
make some hot dogs, right? What do you have to give the guy?
Yeah.
Come on. I
want to make it
ball.
Happen. I was actually out this morning. Playing.
Really?
Sounds weird. By myself. Like, I'll check this out.
That's what I heard.
This is great radio.
What's that?
With the we have a little machine that tosses your soft toss.
No kidding.
Yeah, so.
So you're in the cage.
Yeah, so this is my equivalent to the driving range.
Wow. Yeah, that looks pretty good.
I desperately.
Don't let Keith Hernandez see that. We don't want to scare him off.
Big launch angle there, too.
Yeah. Cone says he's coming to throw the slider.
I would love to see. Cone's
he's
been awesome.
Throw the Laredo with a wiffle ball.
Cone has been awesome in the booth.
Oh, he always is.
He was really – this last couple – I don't know, maybe Rucco's bringing out a different side of him. But Cone has been – he's been throwing out these – on Sunday, he threw out a Vanilla Ice reference.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And is that then, like the only rapper he knows?
I guess. And then last night, Hogan's Heroes. And he's like putting Rucco to
Hogan's
work here.
Hogan's Heroes?
Yeah, he's making Rucco go back and watch like old 70s sitcoms.
Yeah, I'm sure he's doing that.
Because Cone said all I did was watch TV as a kid.
Really?
He didn't play any TV baseball? And he played baseball.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that Cone, speaking of David Cone, he didn't have a high school team?
No, I didn't know that.
He played summer ball. He said he was 15 years old playing with college kids.
He's in Kansas City.
Yep.
Wow.
And then he played a lot, obviously, in Condlestick Park.
Well, guess what? Whatever he did, it worked.
Oh, yeah. And we also have one more thing. Our super producer, Nick. He's got – we got Gleyber Torres. He's hit a bunch of home runs lately.
Yeah.
John Sterling, friend of the program.
Yes, sir.
He's got a call. He got a new one. Are you ready for this, Wally?
I am.
Swung on and there goes deep left. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Over the bullpen into the crowd. It's Gleyber Day. He hits a 3-run home run to left field. And like a good Gleyber, Torres is there.
So,
oh my God, it's an evolution. He just like keeps improving them.
I like how he says like when he came out with us, he's like, now it's a cottage industry. Now everyone expects me to do a call. Meanwhile, he's tinkering with them.
Yeah,
he's changing.
Like
he's got
the
remixes.
Pressure is intense.
He's got remixes. He has
Come
two
on,
calls.
Man, maybe we can get him to come and wow. How about we bring him to the wiffle ball tournament. Jeez.
Now we're shooting.
You know how many home runs we're going to hit too? He's going to be doing this constantly.
He's going to go. He's going to like his voice is going to go out.
No, it won't. It won't. He's been doing. He told me. You know, he said to me when I did a story with him a couple of months ago, he said, I have the same voice I had when I was 30 years old, and it hasn't changed a bit.
It's true. I mean, the guy's recall and his voice.
And he was doing 200 games a year.
He's a horse.
He's amazing.
He's unreal. He's unreal. But that's it. That's all we got for today.
I think that's about enough.
Hopefully, I'm going to get a lot of angry calls from Torrey Hill, the hitting coach.
No. He's looking to improve your swing. Hey, next week. Howie Rose, the voice of the Mets, will join us.
Wow, that's a big one. I know Mets fans are going to be pumped for that one. He is the voice of the Mets.
Yeah, and
no offense to Gary Cohn.
Hey, man, very famous call, New York Rangers.
Matteau.
That's exactly right.
He's an icon in New York when it comes to broadcasting, so I'm looking forward to talking with him. As for the Yankees, they have some big series coming up. They got Washington and not Washington. Who
they got the Angels this weekend. Otani versus Tanaka on Sunday.
Saturday or Sunday?
I think it's Sunday.
Yeah, so they have the Angels and then the Astros come to the Bronx. So
I'll be at both of those.
The Bronx is going to be lit, as the kids say.
The Bronx is burning.
Lit. You know the kids say that.
Yeah, now I have kids. They're even younger than you.
As for the Mets, they are going on the road. They're going at the Brewers. That's going to be tough. And then they have four with the Braves, including a doubleheader on Memorial Day. So we'll see if the Mets can keep it up. Let's see if they can get the clutch hitting, good pitching. The bullpen seems like it's on the right track again. So, you know, interesting times here in New York.
Yeah, they are. And we'll talk about it next Tuesday.
With Howie Rose. All right. Talk to you next week.
Okay.